You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Welcome along to the Garibaldi Gazette. I'm coming to you live from Ireland, Cork specifically. So hello to all of our Irish fans. No Matt Davis Adams this week. So you're going to be here with me, Arshar Ali. And later I'm going to be joined by The Athletic, Nick Miller. Sorry, Nick Miller of The Athletic. And seeing as it's been a pretty deathly international break and save for the news of Forest lodging an appeal right at the deadline for you know what, and news this morning coming out that Forest might be shopping for managers again, it's been pretty quiet, hasn't it, as a Reds fan? So we thought we'd do something a little bit different this week, which means we're going to be joined by a very special guest. Tall, grumpy, magnetic. Those are just some of the words used to describe his work. But today we're going to be meeting the man behind the art. And if there was an errant letter F flying around, we could be meeting the man behind the fart. But here at the Garibaldi Gazette Towers, we're only interested in one F. And that's the one F in Forest. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce an interview with artist and more importantly, Reds fan, David Shrigley. Enjoy.
Welcome, David Shrigley. Hello, David.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. I'm reading from no less a source than Wikipedia here, but you were born in Cheshire, moved to Leicester when you were young, lived in Scotland for a lot of your life, and now I believe live in Brighton. So can you tell us how you became a Forest fan?
I became a Forest fan in about early 1978. The story that I recall at that time was that my friend Gareth, I didn't really like football. I was into Star Wars. My friend Gareth was into football, and he told me that Nottingham Forest was a really cool football team to support. So I supported them as well. And I thought, yeah, Forest, that's a good name for a team, unlike City or United or whatever. So anyway, I was at that time about 9 years old, I think. And I supported Forest from then on. And then they won the league. They won the League Cup. They won the European Cup. Do I need to continue? They got relegated to League One. They got a points deduction. And here we are.
The potted history of Nottingham Forest.
Yeah. So I didn't understand the implications of the decision I was making when I was about 9 years old, because I lived in the suburbs of Leicester at that time. And yeah, my life was made a misery kind of growing up by Leicester fans. And I had to be very covert about my love of Nottingham Forest. I didn't go to Forest that much until I got a bit older. Like my dad, bless him, who didn't like football, took me periodically. And then my sister moved to Nottingham to study, my older sister. So I'd go and stay with her and her boyfriend would take me to see Forest. And eventually I started going on my own. And basically my following of Nottingham Forest has always been a very lonely pursuit until fairly recently. There was a moment in the early noughties where I made a couple of friends who I went with, and they lived in London, friends of friends. So I went with them for a few years, and then they kind of moved away, lost touch. And it's only really recently, like probably 2019, that I've actually made a group of friends who I go with. So I've been going to watch Forest for 40 odd years alone, or occasionally with my dad, occasionally with my sister. But yeah, mostly alone, traveling to, you know, Walsall on a Tuesday night, alone, watching Forest. And also it was not helped by the fact I moved to Glasgow when I was 19. So that's a tricky, it's tricky to get to the city ground on a Saturday afternoon and back. I used to time visits to my parents, obviously, with home games, still do, who still live in Leicester. And yeah, so I have quite a different experience of supporting Forest. Like, I was really excited when we were in League One because we played Carlisle away. And I could, that's the one game that I could do in a day quite easily, only an hour and a half drive from Glasgow. And Newcastle away was a bit tricky, but that was, did that. Sunderland away, did that. So yeah, been to probably as many away games as I have home games. Because even now, I live in Brighton. It's quite a tough Saturday to get up at 8:30, you know, to be on the train at 8:30 in the morning and then back home about 10 o'clock at night, full of beer and misery. But, you know, we all do it to ourselves, don't we? And Forest is the really the only thing that really makes me happy and really makes me miserable, apart from the, you know, the normal things in life like love and despair and stuff. But I also started watching Partick Thistle when I lived in Glasgow. And I'm kind of, there was never any conflict of interest there. So I could go and watch Thistle over a weekend. They're sort of the non-partisan team in Glasgow. And that gave me a lot of joy. And I sort of became involved with the club and met a rich hedge fund manager. And he ended up sponsoring the club. These things happen. I designed the mascot, became very famous. Still have a lot to do with Partick Thistle. Still have an emotional investment with Partick Thistle. But it sort of oscillates sometimes. I started going to watch Thistle because it took my mind off Forest. So Saturday afternoon, when you're watching remotely or following the games remotely, it's just miserable. I find it truly miserable. When you're at the game, it's all right. But if you're just following from afar, as I was a lot of the time, it just makes you so upset. So to take my mind off it, I started to go and watch Partick Thistle. And then I, you know, after a certain point, there were certain seasons where, you know, Forest weren't going to go up and weren't going to go down. And then Thistle's fortunes were a bit more exciting. They could go up or they could go down. So that changed a bit. And I still go and watch different football teams. I have a, my wife has a house in Devon. So I go and watch Exeter City fairly often. And I go and watch a non-league team here called Whitehawk. But again, in some ways, it's really just to take my mind off Forest. And Exeter City actually got promoted a couple of seasons ago from League Two to League One. And there was a terrible moment, actually, where I thought that they were going to end up playing Forest, which would have been terrible. But the night Exeter got promoted, I was there. It was a midweek game. We were playing Fulham. It was when we beat Fulham 1-0 away, which was sort of April, I think. And everybody was on the pitch except for the disabled people and me. And I was in the stands looking at my phone because the phone hadn't finished yet. And I said to myself, and they were like, where? They were like, where are you? I was like, Forest game, I hadn't finished yet. All right, yeah. And I realized I just need to go to the games. That it's a distraction from watching another game in some ways. So now I've got some friends to go with. I go and watch them. Well, not more than I used to, but I watch Forest. It's a bit of a less lonely pursuit these days.
I don't know about you, but like watching lower league football now with the state that Forest are and where they are now, it feels like a kind of colonic, like a bit of a sort of palate cleanse. I know those are two opposite ends of the body, but do you know what I mean? It feels like from what you're seeing, this, what you're seeing on TV and you're seeing this kind of shiny glossy product and just the excess of it all. I don't know, like with Whitehawk though, that's a, you know, those kind of teams, they've got a little bit more about them. So like my local team is York City, so I go and see them, and you know, they're sort of perfectly miserable. They're kind of, you know, not really doing up to much, but they don't really stand for anything. Whereas Whitehawk, I know, obviously are famous for being sort of the Clash come alive. You know, if they were a football team, they're sort of anti-racist, anti-fascist, you know, all that kind of stuff. So does it feel like that when you go and watch the team like Whitehawk?
It does, unless Forest are playing at the same time, in which case it's just a horrible distraction. You know, I'm not. What I love about the Premier League, palate cleansing, etc. aside, is that they don't play always at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. so it doesn't actually ruin my experience of watching White Hawk. Because, you know, often it's I go to White Hawk and then I'm, you know, I've taken the dog and stuff. And then we lose 4-0 to West Ham and it's sort of like, oh, yeah, it's just really, they're like, why are you so miserable? We're winning. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. So, yeah, I don't know. But yes, you're right. There is something really lovely about White Hawk because the club is really progressive. The fan base is really progressive. And it's kind of funky. It's very bright, and, you know, in both a good way and a bad way. You know, so people sort of dress like they're going to a fancy dress party, which is what Brighton is like, you know, if you're familiar with Brighton. But yeah, there's something really nice about a community club and knowing the players and boiling on a horrible pitch. And you can take the dog and take the kids. You can drink beer if you drink beer while you watch. And you actually feel that you have some ownership of the experience. Whereas, yeah, Premier League is just a product where we're just, you know, we can be treated. It's the, yeah, I mean, it's an amazing product, you know, to be peddling because you can completely abuse the customer. You can make the customer miserable. You can give them a horrible match day experience. You can rip them off as you wish, and they will still keep coming back. And I can't think of another product that you or service that you can sell where the customer will do that. I don't know. It's like sort of S&M or something, you know.
Yes, drugs. Yeah.
S&M. Drugs. I mean, drugs are more fun than the Premier League.
Are we saying that if Forest got relegated down to kind of non-league regional leagues, then we'd all actually be a lot happier about things?
That's obviously not what I'm saying, Nick. It's an observation. Yeah, I should also say I was on the Scottish football podcast last week. So having bored myself talking about art for the last many years, I'm suddenly, yeah, my cup runneth over. You know, I'm suddenly talking about something that I actually have a more than a professional involvement in, I suppose. So weirdly, I was talking about Partick Thistle last week and Kingsley, the mascot. And rather different, you know. I always associate Scottish football with freezing to death, you know. Because if you think that Nottinghamshire is cold, west of Scotland, you know, going up to an away game at Dingwall in January, that's harsh, man. That's harsh. Anyway, you know, we love it. We do it.
You mentioned Kingsley. I'm sure you asked about Kingsley a huge amount. Have you ever, I mean, ever had any designs to sort of jazz up Forest's mascot at all? I don't know. Actually, what is the Forest mascot at the moment? Is it Sherwood the Bear, is it?
Yes, the one with the, you know, the what's his name? Robin Hood type character.
Oh, yeah.
That guy back.
It's a bit rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, with a really square jaw.
I like Nutty the Squirrel. He was good. I mean, the squirrel really made sense to me. But then it was a fox, and I'm like, come on, you're kind of a fox.
Someone dropped the ball there.
It was Sherwood the fox. I'm like, whose idea was that? I mean, yeah, I obviously know a lot about mascots, and I would kind of do pretty much anything for Forest because I love Forest, obviously. But also the thing about Partick Thistle and White Hawk is that I've kind of done stuff for the club, and I've become, you know, so if ever I want tickets for if ever Thistle got to the final of a playoff, for example, you know, I get offered a ticket. I got offered a ticket for Thistle in the playoff final last year. You may know that they, anyway, if you don't know what happened, it was hilariously awful. But trying to get tickets for this playoff, because I like a lot of Forest fans, my membership lapsed during COVID. I was like, well, what's the point in getting a membership? And then I just couldn't get it back. And it's been really difficult to get tickets. And then the mother of all games happened where we went to Wembley, and we were, I can't remember, I was going to pay like £2,000 for a ticket for that game until Rob Fish, bless him, came up with a friend from the FA and we got tickets. But if that had been Partick Thistle, I'd have been right in there. So yeah, I feel like I want to ingratiate myself to the club just so that when the time comes, I can get tickets for those special games. I'm sure there will be more.
I only managed to get a ticket for the playoff final because someone else just decided not to go.
Wow.
I know. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on that, the kind of dark soul that made that active decision.
Yeah, that person's been huddled in regret ever since.
Well, I hope so.
I ended up getting two tickets and took a very fair weather Forest fan with me, sitting next to me, who wasn't emotionally invested in the result as I was. And I was saw him last weekend and he was like, oh, you remember that game? You were just sitting there rocking. Your eyes closed for the entire game, just like saying the same thing over and over. Like, keep the ball, keep the ball, keep the ball. And basically everybody in this, all Forest fans were like that, sort of. It was just a moment of intense anxiety, followed by joy, followed by an entire season of anxiety, followed by joy, followed by a season of worse anxiety, which is where we're at now.
That's Forest.
Yeah, I think just before the playoff final, I was with my wife and I'd gone very quiet and she said, are you all right? This was the day of the game. And I said, no, obviously not. Why would I be all right? Just horrific.
I've blacked out sort of all of it. I just remember arriving at my seat and then something happened. And then I decided to forego a halftime snack. I remember that bit. And then dancing. Lots of dancing and hugging random people.
Yeah, there was that. I remember the joy was so overwhelming that people just didn't know what to do with themselves. But I didn't. And my friend, Rob Fish, who got the tickets for me, we were in a pub, I don't know, somewhere in North London, and just sort of trying to process what had happened. And there were no Forest fans there. It were just us. And they were doing like some kind of quiz. There was like a pub quiz. And he just, in between questions, he ran up and got the mic and then made what I recall to be a 15-minute speech about not... this group of people in the pub who had thought they were doing a pub quiz. And there was this dude from Nottingham just giving them a blow-by-blow account of what had happened and what it meant. And then they all gave him a round of applause.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Spreading the brief moment of joy of Nottingham Forest to strangers in a North London pub.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. there's a lot to be said we've talked about this before. I think I might have mentioned it on the episode that we put out with Nadia Whittam. I was just too exhausted after the game to celebrate at all. I was in bed by about 9:30. It was just as you say, an emotionally overwhelming experience that I don't know whether we've all, and any of us have really kind of gotten over it, really.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Arsenal game last season when we beat Arsenal 1-0. That was pretty, that felt good. That felt really good. But it wasn't quite as, like, I felt like I was better able to deal with that joy. But the joy of actually winning the playoff final, I didn't really know what to do about that. It was like being a small child.
I guess that probably says more about us as Forest fans. We always sort of, I don't know about you guys, but I always sort of go in armed for the worst, always. You know, not in that kind of like lack of optimism, but just kind of, I don't know, it's just kind of, yeah, it's kind of self-defense, isn't it? You know, we've been disappointed so many times, especially in moments like that of high drama, of high kind of jeopardy, that you just think, oh, they'll Forest it, they'll find a Forest way, and we'll balls it up.
Yeah, I don't know. There is that kind of inverse superstition where if you tell yourself it's going to be terrible, then it will be okay. I think the worst season of anxiety for me was kind of the COVID season, because it was all kind of remote. And also we were doing really badly as well and might have got relegated, but for Glenn Murray. and then I found that torturous. I found that all those COVID games really, really torturous. Like, I was really, truly miserable. And I think it probably was because you couldn't actually go to the game, because there's something very healing about being at the game with 30,000 other anxious, angry, unhappy, but sometimes joyful people. But yeah, the COVID was hard.
It was that kind of sort of extent. You know, the thing that sports people always say about how they're always more nervous if they're part of a team and they're watching the game, they're always more nervous when they're watching them if they are actually taking part. And it's a sort of, obviously we can't, I think we sort of kid ourselves that we can affect the play and affect how Forest do, which I suppose we can to a point. But I think it was a sort of extension of that, is that we still do have this sort of semi-true fantasy that we can do something about it if we're actually there. But yeah, as you say, because we weren't, we couldn't do anything about it. We were just sort of staring at small screens or relying on Radio Nottingham or whatever. And it was just a bleak, bleak experience.
Yeah, bleak, bleak experience. I feel like you can influence the game if you're there by shouting, "Keep the ball! Keep the bloody ball!" Shout that at the top of your voice throughout the game. That's going to help the side, I reckon.
Or shouting man on. Some sort of, we always do that with the best of intentions, but because it all comes out at the wrong time, it just goes, and it doesn't help anyone. Like, if there was a clear unified shout of man on, you know, the guy would know.
Yeah. But there's, you know, football is sort of, there always seems to be like a split between the real negative people who are there for some kind of shout therapy and don't really understand that shouting just, "Get it up there, you twat!" Shouting that isn't really helpful. Whereas singing "Miss Rowling" in front of Trent is kind of helpful in unison. But I don't know. I mean, I guess people who shout, "Get me up there, you twat!" are, you know, that is a symptom of the emotional state that they're in, and there's nothing they can do about it. It's involuntary. But yeah, I suddenly feel nervous. I'm going to Palace on Saturday. Feels a bit sick now, actually, thinking about it. But the thing is, though, that we're not going to talk about current events, obviously, as stated. However, I actually feel we're doing all right this season. But, this is secret. I'm not telling anybody else this. I'm just telling you this. I think we're doing all right because we're playing better than we were last season. And it seemed like we just managed to pull results out of our arses last season somehow. And I feel like we're actually just sort of squandering the same results, having played really well. But I just feel a sense of dread.
what a sentence that was to start off with. Yeah, we were actually playing all right, but
I tell you what really annoys me this season. Before the game, you're talking to people and they say, "Do you know what? I think we'll be all right this season." And I say, "Don't say that. We're not going to be all right. It's going to be terrible. We're playing Exeter City. We're going to play Derby next season. It's going to be terrible." But I tell you what is good. If we, the inevitable does happen, we'll have a really good championship side and we get all the players back on loan, the entire squad that we've got on loan. That's
Josh Bowler. Let's see, Josh Bowler.
Quite a decent squad for the championship, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so. Bring Worrell back. Got Yates in there, I think. You know, it's a good start.
Yeah. If you bring Sam back, it'll be all right.
Yeah, bring Jed Spence back as well. Get the old band back together. Brilliant.
Get the band back together. Oh, Jed. Why do you have to mention Jed?
Yeah, sorry.
That Korean guy's quite good if he was given a chance in the championship, whatever his name is.
Hwang Ujo.
Hwang, yeah. We've obviously discussed the existential despair of supporting Nottingham Forest. Has the existential despair of supporting Nottingham Forest, do you think, influenced your work at any point? I'm talking to David here. I mean, it could be for Arsha.
Well, actually, yeah.
It'd be very unprofessional if it affected Arsha's work, wouldn't it? Arsha, could we do that again without where you're smiling?
But saying that, though, I'm like, sorry to just come in and hear, but like, there was a time when I would turn down work because it would interfere with Forest fixtures, and I knew that there was no way I'd be able to get back, or it'd be filming in Latvia or something, and I'd be like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to miss Forest. How awful is that?
Miss Preston away.
Yeah, I'm going to miss Stoke at home. What are you talking about, mate?
Tell Martin Scorsese we've got a League Cup game that week.
If he wants me, he can rearrange filming around the championship fixture list.
Yeah, bring Forest to America. Play the fixture out there.
Yeah. Well, I do that, obviously, but I can do that, you know, because it's not... my presence generally isn't required on particular days. Things can be rearranged. But yeah, that angst finds its way into my work. I used to feel like football was kind of a release from art, you know. I mean, obviously, I love being an artist. That I'm the luckiest man in the world that I just get to do silly drawings all day and not have to have a job. And also indulge my football and penchants as well. But yeah, that also football is the most exquisite torture. And you have to sometimes, as on a therapeutic level, you have to do drawings about angst and violence in order to soothe yourself when you've drawn against Luton twice. That requires some work and personal work. But yeah, as I said to Asha before this podcast, those two games, that's like having, like being stabbed in the heart as two late equalizers. That was painful. Some of the most painful goals I've seen. I don't think I'll ever get over it. The only way I'm going to get over that is if we stay up, obviously. And then, I'll do some really happy drawings of, like, Bambi or something, you know.
Can you ever, even, like, look at a piece of work that you've done and think, oh, yeah, I remember that game? The game that, you know.
Yeah, I can, actually. Yeah. I can. I mean, some, you know, it works both ways where you're just like, right, I'm not going to think about football ever again. I'm just going to, you know, focus on art from now on until next Saturday at least. But yeah, definitely. I mean, often, you know, I'd go to the studio on a Saturday afternoon if there's no football to go to, and I'll just make art just, you know, because art's a therapy, right? Art's really important for everybody, not just for professional artists. It's a good thing to do. It's good for your emotional health. It's good for everything. It's a positive thing. So if you do that rather than just sitting in front of a laptop screen looking at Twitter X, kind of swearing and rocking and chanting, that's positive, right? So yeah, art is life. Football is misery. Occasionally, football is joy.
I mean, being a football journalist, I do spend a huge amount of my time staring bleakly at Twitter/X. So I think the lesson we've got from this is that I need to take up drawing of some description.
You should. Everybody should. Yeah, art, health, and well-being. That's my thing, you know. Football, health, and well-being. I don't know how that works. when I'm playing football, that's good. That's healthy. Everybody, yeah, let's get running around. But just watching it, ooh, don't go there. One of the things, I occasionally meet people, and I say, oh, what team do you support? And they say, I don't really support a team. You know, occasionally, you know, I go and watch Arsenal now and again. Or I watch Orient or whatever. I think, wow, that must be nice. You know, just to go to games and just enjoy the smell of the pies and the banter and not be emotionally invested into it. But I don't know, maybe that's a mistake. Maybe that's like never getting into a relationship because you're afraid of getting hurt and you're never going to experience joy. You're never going to experience the joy of beating Bristol City away on a Tuesday night with two injury time goals.
Yeah, scored by someone with pink hair who's also a Tory.
Yeah. Oh. Mind detail.
I was supposed to be working in an impartial capacity at that game, reporting on it. It was the greatest test of my professionalism of all time, I think. I can't really remember disgracing myself.
Must be like Gary Neville.
Yeah.
United didn't deserve to win.
Oh, why do you have to talk about those days? The Stevie Cooper days.
Oh.
Stevie Cooper. Yeah, I know. I mean, I know. It hurt. But I sort of, we were really okay with it, like four games later, weren't we?
It is another frequent topic of conversation on this podcast that I think we've probably asked everyone who's been on about how far removed are we now? 4 months or 3-4 months from Cooper going? How are you? I don't think me, Asher, and Matt have really still dealing with it emotionally very well. What was? How are you feeling about Steve Cooper no longer being Forest manager.
There's no place for sentiment in football, as you well know. But yeah, Steve Cooper, I guess, you know, he's just a lovely man. And I loved him. I still love him. I still wish him well, even if he goes to Derby or somewhere. I still have a soft spot for him. I think, you know, and also the thing is, if we had like 6 more points at this point, or maybe 10 more points, we'd all be just like, yeah, we love Steve Cooper. But anyway, Nuno's our guy, blah, blah, blah. But I think the thing about Steve Cooper, the thing I think now, is that there was a certain magic. There was a certain magic that he had where he could sort of somehow just get us over the line in certain games. But then there were lots of games last season where we didn't even lay a glove on anybody and got nothing and deserved nothing. Hardly had a shot on goal. And Steve Cooper somehow seemed to magic those results, which we sort of didn't really deserve. Like that, you know, the early game against West Ham at home, game against Palace, bloody lucky in those games. And that was sort of Steve Cooper magic. And it was sort of a special, positive magic because he deserves it, because he's a lovely, lovely man. And we all love him. But I feel like, you know, now that kind of Nuno is sort of a jaded journeyman coach, and somehow that magic is, he's deprived of that magic, that bit of luck somehow.
Yeah, he just doesn't, quite often just doesn't, he looks like he would rather be anywhere else, which doesn't, you know, A, doesn't give you a huge amount of confidence that he's going to inspire the team, but also it makes him quite difficult to warm to. Not a very warmy to character.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you win,
this is true.
You start winning, suddenly you start smiling. Whereas right now, he's just sort of grimacing, like he's sort of not quite clenched teeth, but just sort of.
Yeah, he's like a sort of monk who's, you know, discovering that God might not exist.
Yeah.
It feels like that. It feels like there's definitely like, what have I done with my life? This is what I've committed to. And
like he's watching, finding out that one of his children has some behavioral disorder and he's watching them play. and it's just, he's trying not to just start shaking his head. And sort of like, you know, he's just sort of looking at things and thinking, why is this unfolding in this way when I've prepared so well? Why can we still not defend a set piece? You know, why? I'm so good at this. Why is it not working?
This is one of the very, very many reasons why I'd be a terrible football manager, because I would just be standing on the sideline doing that. And I'd just be thinking, but I told them to score goals and I told them not to concede any goals, and they're doing the exact opposite of that. So what's going on here?
Is that your halftime team talk?
Yeah.
Remember what I told you before the game?
Exactly.
Done that? No. Well, do it in the second half then. I don't know. You always think there's these legendary managers who don't say anything at halftime. They just give them a stern look, and that works amazingly well. I mean, that's obviously a lot of bollocks, because it's all about, I don't know, tactics and stuff. But I mean, Nuno knows a lot about tactics and I know very little. He probably knows about man management and stuff. The only thing I can do really is just magical thinking. That would be my approach, because that's really all that's available to me, magical thinking. I don't know. I would go, what I would do is I'd have a little jar of turmeric and I'd sprinkle a little bit onto the defender.
It's the classic thing of, as someone who's been involved in a lot of how event X happened in, you know, football, is obviously the sort of thing that if Forest won, then everyone would be sprinkling turmeric around, and it'd be the great spice genius David Shrigley has sprinkled this on football. But then if it failed, you would be lunatic David Shrigley who eschewed tactical talk and man management in favour of turmeric.
Oh yeah, there'd be other things as well, man. I'd just like paint a bit of glitter onto Anthony Elanga's boots so that goal would have gone in. I'd I'd rub some mandrake into the centre back's head. stuff like that.
Some must try Sangare's boots.
Yeah.
Just to get him moving.
But yeah, he's been a little bit sluggish recently. But he's going to come good. He's going to come good. That's because as soon as the turmeric kicks in, so no pun intended, he's going to be the player that we paid for.
Well, with all of your inspirational tactics and the turmeric in mind, can you reassure us, David? Are we going to be all right? How's the rest of the season going to pan out?
Do you know what, Nick? I think we're going to be all right.
We're going to be fine.
Yeah, we're going to be fine. Come on. Come on, lads. Optimism. Come on. You don't get out for an out in these days. And what can we do? Let's face it, what can we do? There is nothing that we can do. We can jibber-jabber this nonsense at each other, or we can be positive and we can sprinkle turmeric on players when we see them in Asda.
I'm going to take some on Saturday. If anyone comes near me.
Yeah, if you see
some of that.
Right, if you see Ryan Yates in Asda, you can just be like, just drop some turmeric into his basket. Buy the turmeric. And then after he's gone through the checkout, just say, "Oh, I noticed you didn't buy any turmeric, Ryan. This is for you.
This is for you, Ryan Yates."
Yeah.
Just use his full name. You've got to use his full name.
Bless him with the turmeric as he's standing outside the supermarket.
I don't know why I said turmeric, but it's a good thing, right, turmeric?
Yeah, and it helps in recovery and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, man. And
leaves a stain. It leaves a mark.
What else can we realistically do? But then at the same time, as we've discussed, pessimism is a form of optimism as well. And sometimes there's that reverse superstitious thing where it'd be like, we're fucked, you know? So I'll say that as well. We're going down. We're going down with the Tories.
We're going down.
Well, I think as an institution, it's after hosting Rishi Sunak last week, it's no more than we deserve. I think that's probably a suitably downbeat note to end things on. So, David Shrigley, thank you very much for joining us.
My great pleasure.